seen the video of the guy that they have him count backwards because they think he's having a stroke? And he goes 178. And they're like, MRI.
That's right. Well, that's like if I ever got pulled over and they say, do the alphabet backwards, I don't think I could.
I'd have to think about it.
I couldn't do that sober, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think I'd have trouble, you know, standing on one leg and do it. I think I would.
That's right.
Feel that,
balance.
You know? Balance.
The whole balance thing. Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
All right.
Take it away, whatever.
Thank you.
Don, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. How have you been?
Doing very well. Very anxious to talk to you today because you're sort of our global guy and thought leader conversations. And boy, we've had a lot of global news since you've been here last.
The 24-hour news cycle, I'm sure, has been full from tariffs and trades to Stormy Daniels and stocks. So there's a full 24-hour news panel that's out there.
It's the first two that we're concerned about this morning, tariffs and trade.
Yep.
What should we be concerned about as we sit here today?
Well, you know me. I am all about free trade. I don't think tariffs, I don't think trade wars are good for anyone. That being said, I also don't believe that administrations go off half-cocked. I think there is a bigger master plan behind all of this. When you're sitting there throwing the trade and tariff card onto the table and you're sort of going nose to nose with China, I do believe that there are back channel discussions being had on as far as let's come to some agreement on this. And I think the rattling of the cage, the tariffs, the trade war rhetoric, and maybe even some of the tariffs that are coming out on some of the items that are there, you know, or just to get people's attention and get them at the table. You know, I think the real negotiations are behind the doors right now. And just the whole scenario of what it means for the global markets, for Europe, how is Europe going to benefit from that? And in the long run, is that a good thing for the U.S.? So, you know, the tariffs on the surface look bad. I'm not a big believer in them. But I think there's a bigger game behind everything that has yet to be revealed.
Yeah, the tariffs, and different from the other trade stories that we've been seeing, the tariffs, he's now exempted. The Trump administration's now exempted 5 of the 6.
Yep.
So that's sort of negated that whole situation.
Right.
But the trade war, that's... I'm confused about that. I'm not sure what the backroom conversation is unless they're just trying to get better deals, like the South Korea deal that we heard from today.
Right.
More cars going to South Korea at a better price.
Right. The administration's been very consistent in saying that these trade agreements are not favorable to the U.S. Most of them aren't. Vast majority are not favorable to the U.S. And I think he wants to address that. So I think he throws that card. I think he rattles it a little bit, and it's the behind-the-scenes discussions that are occurring. So more cars, you know, the whole agreement with it. You're going to see lots of these little things popping up and coming to the surface because he's forcing people to the table. You have to. I mean, if you're going to sit there and start throwing tariffs around and start charging, it's going to bring people to the table because the U.S. economy is just too big. You know, we're a global leader out there, and as the U.S. emerges and as we have emerged, the rest of the world goes with it. And if we start rattling the cage a little bit, it's going to bring people to the table to discuss. So I think this was the opening salvo. There's lots of discussions going on behind it. It's going to be really interesting to see what's going to come out of it.
How is this affecting the focus of your world, and that's the currency markets?
Yeah, in the currency markets, there hasn't been a lot of movement. Everybody's sort of on the sideline to see what's going to happen. You have to remember the currency market, the foreign exchange markets don't lead markets. They are a final output, a result of capital flows that move around. So take a look at global stock markets. Take a look at global bond markets. What's going on there? Where is that hot money moving? And that's going to drive through the FX markets. And then those exchange rates will end up wherever they end up. So the foreign currency markets don't lead anything. They're a final output. So when you take a look at, just take a look at the domestic stock market, what's happening? Down 400, up 600 on the Dow. Very, very big swings, very, very nervous. You know, 2% moves are big. And there's a lot of jittering going on there. But what's really changed when you take a step back and said, what is really corrected? What is really advanced? Not a lot. We've had maybe a 10% correction in the Dow, and that seems to have come back a little bit. Same with the overseas markets. You know, there hasn't been a lot of movement in that yet. So to me, I see a lot of jittering, a lot of nervousness. It's like horses in a chute getting ready to run. And if they're going to run forward or backward, we don't know which way they're going to run yet. But they are just in the chute, ready to bolt. And it is now the time to do it? You're seeing all that all over the place.
Yeah, and the dollar's still a star of the show, but there's been talk that maybe they should be looking elsewhere, to the euro or something like that. Seems kind of scary to be thinking the dollar might not be at the top there anymore.
Yeah, you know, the market likes to sit there and you know, that they have to put out their daily supply of information, current information. And if the markets are sideways and just sort of bouncing sideways like they are in this nervous state, they have to still come out with information. And it's okay to sit there and say, the markets are sort of in chains right now. They're sort of moving sideways right now until they get some direction of what's going on. Because on one hand, you've got tariffs. On the other hand, you've got the U.S. economy and the world global economy pushing up. You know, on the other hand, you've got this thing called Brexit that sits out there. And that's the 800-pound gorilla that sort of sits in the background. So you've got all of these pieces that are out there, and they haven't really come together yet on what's going to propel this amoeba into the next direction, the next mm-hmm. market move that you're going to see. Personally, I'm not a big dollar bull at this stage, simply because tariffs are not good. I want to see what comes out of these discussions. But at the bottom line, tariffs are not good for the United States. They're not good for the dollar. Again, we'll see what kind of trade agreements come out, but that could be a six-month process.
So when you hear stories where we hear things like reserve managers at central banks are looking to add more euros, what's the end real-time, real-world result of that?
I don't put a lot of value in a lot of that. I mean, what is a reserve currency in the first place? You know, whether you're a country, a nation, an individual, what do you feel comfortable holding? What is a good store of value? What has liquidity that is easily convertible? What currencies represent those nations that have the infrastructure to handle flows, the consistency and the stability within that infrastructure to sit there and handle the capital markets and to handle the money? The United States is a big one in there. The euro sort of fell off the radar screen simply because when European interest rates went so low, the negative return on that, there was no real sense to hold on to the euro as a reserve currency. It just didn't make sense. I mean, if you're sitting there holding some asset in euro, this reserve currency in euro, and it's losing value when compared after inflation, the real rate of return on that, no sense. Get rid of it. Okay, so now you're sort of seeing, as European interest rates have moved up and your real rate of return on euros now is a positive, it makes sense to sit there and say, well, maybe we should hold some. At the end of the day, though, it's how nations and central banks and countries view that reserve currency they're holding. You can hold a reserve currency in anything you want. Dollars, gold, Swiss, grains, chicken. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's what you view as what's going to hold its value, what's going to have the depth and the infrastructure if I need to move this, what's going to have the liquidity, what's going to have the consistency over time. Dollar's going to be a big part of that going forward. Percentages might change a little bit, but at the end of the day, dollar's going to be around there for a long time.
Yeah, China loves to hold on to our dollars, right?
Sure.
I think their reserve is something like $3 billion. Dollars are at the top of that.
Yep.
Because of the cheap exports going over there.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. And remember how all this started. After World War II, the United States was the only game around. Allies won the war. The UK was pretty beaten up. All of our allies were pretty much bombed or pretty beaten up and financially, I won't say ruined, but they were on the brink. The United States was the only game around. The Axis forces, Germany, Japan, they were all defeated. So the U.S. became the World Bank. Everybody was comfortable holding dollars. And that inertia has propelled us from the 1940s all the way up into now. People are comfortable holding dollars. It's why the U.S. is one of the biggest, or is the biggest economy in the world. We've got the deepest capital markets that are out there and the deepest infrastructure. That's not going to change anytime soon. You might see it on the fringe, you know, let's hold 5 or 10% in euros or some other currency, but you're not going to see major swings. But if it happened, so what? That's okay. It's not going to hurt the United States at all. So you elect to hold euros versus U.S. It's going to flow through the FX markets. Maybe. Depends on how long of a time you're going to change your mix around. Because these nations have capital flows that occur between central banks all the time. So you receive dollars. You receive euros. You elect not to exchange them. You're going to hold them in that currency. You've got your targets on what you want to hold. It's not going to matter to me. It's not going to hurt our economy. It's not going to hurt our interest rates. Maybe it'll impact foreign exchange a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're already talking a market that can move 15, 20, 25% in the course of a year. It's not going to move outside of that.
So then, you know, if people are saying, gee, Don, I'm kind of nervous watching the market on a day-to-day basis, is your view still the long view, still watched over time? Or what kind of advice would you point people to in the short term?
Yeah, I'm still very bullish the United States. I'm still very, very bullish the United States. The U.S. has led everybody out of this, out of the recession and the doldrums that we were in. The world economies, especially the major ones, are starting to bubble forth and they're coming forward as well. I'm surprised that we haven't had more or greater changes in U.S. interest rates. I'm surprised interest rates are relatively low. The yield curve is very, very flat. I think that's got the Fed sort of scratching their head a little bit. And they're trying to balance out, well, everything tells me there's inflationary pressures out there in the U.S., but we don't see them exactly yet. Maybe we see the beginnings of it, but it's certainly not represented in the yield curve. With that, you've got foreign countries that are sitting there really starting to bubble along with the U.S. Now, how do you keep that going? You know, and it gets back to me, to the whole tariff discussion that we had. Tariffs are bad initially, but what's the behind-the-channel communication going on? Why is the U.S. focusing on China, opening up Europe to sit there and do a lot of that trade? Mm-hmm. Because to me, the U.S. leads, that's the initial prime the engine, prime the pump of the world economy. Where it really starts is as Europe and other major countries step out, those flows come back to the United States as well as other parts of the world. And now you've got this two-way loop of the cycle that goes. And now the world economy, the world engine is really starting to bubble and really starting to cook. And that's, I think, very positive. That's sort of where I am. Still U.S., still going to be led by the U.S., still going to be driven by the U.S. Very, very bullish the U.S.
You mentioned Brexit earlier, and there was a survey done recently by some of the biggest banks. They their sentiment on Britain leaving the EU is more concerning than it was for the global financial crisis. And then we hear today that as many as 12% of companies may be looking to pull their business out of London at Brexit.
Sure. It's the prudent thing to do. If you're sitting there and you're a steward of a company that sits over in the UK, you have to sit there and say, as a steward, what am I doing with my shareholders and my owners? How am I protecting their interests? What are these unknowns that are on the horizon? Yeah, I think to some extent the downside, if you do nothing and something bad happens, if Brexit continues to bubble out and there's big significant economic impacts and you've done nothing, how are you going to explain that? So you may as well take a more of a defensive stance and say, well, what if? Let's expect, you know, hope for the best, expect the worst. Doesn't mean we're pulling up and running away, but we're going to sit there and have our avenues and our plans to move out, and maybe we start to move things mm-hmm. out of the UK a little bit. I think that's the prudent thing to do. I would be shocked if the markets over there and companies over there were not doing things like that.
Yeah. I thought of you recently. There's a video that's been going around, a viral video in the business world of a 10-year-old kid in Connecticut who is chattering on about Bitcoin, and he knows more about it than some of the experts they put up against him. Yeah. We've had conversations yeah. about Bitcoin before. What is it, like $5,000 this
yeah,
morning?
Yeah, I think it was $8,000. Yeah. But think about that, the flash in the pan that was. Yeah. I mean, we couldn't get enough of that. It was all over the news, and now it has just drifted off and has gone away. Still there, it'll still make headlines, but you know, not to the extent that it was. I mean, you know, once you turn the light on and you yeah. shine the light on these things, and the professional market really takes a deep dive look at what's going on there. Okay, it's either we're interested in it or we're not really interested in it. Flash in the pan, it's over. It was a pet rock. Yeah. I don't think you're going to hear much of Bitcoin other than negative news. You know, right. Gee, it sold off by 50% or something like that. You'll hear that, but it's over.
I'm still jealous of this 10-year-old kid because he knows more about it than I do, though.
Isn't that the wave of the future, right, though, hey?
Don, it's always good seeing you. We'll see you again next month.
Thanks, Steve.